This is Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 3. Krishna is the source of all incarnation, text number 16. The 11th incarnation of the Lord took the form of a tortoise, whose shell served as a pivot for the Mandarachala hill, which is being used as a churning rod by the theist and the atheist of the universe. Report by His Divine Grace, Asa Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Once both the atheist and the theist were engaged in producing nectar from the sea so that all of them could become deathless by drinking it. At the time, the Mandalachala hill was used as a churning rod, and the shell of tortoise, the incarnation of Godhead, became the resting place, pivot of the hill in the seawater. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamaham Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Sya Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Raghana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sabarutam Padijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Mahavaranaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Gora. Alright, so that is a very well-known Leela here in Thailand, right? If you've been to the airport in Bangkok. Somehow or other, they made that diorama of this Leela. The demons and the devotees and the demigods and the demons churning the ocean and Krishna standing on top of the mountain. Everything is there. Actually, the king recommended to put that there. I heard. He said it represents prosperity. I don't know about that, but so this is a special Leela because many incarnations came during this Leela. There was first that, you know, the demigods were defeated by the demons, and they went to Krishna, and he said that at this time they couldn't fight with the demons. The demons were very powerful. They should make a truce, and then they should make this proposal that together they could churn the ocean and get the nectar out, because neither one of them could do it by themselves. So they agreed, and the demons agreed because they wanted the nectar, and they figured when it came out they would steal it, take off with it. So Krishna told them to take this big mountain to churn. You know, it's a big ocean. This ocean here is pretty big for us, but it's not the causal ocean. It's just a little ocean on this little planet. And when we just see the little bit of it, we can see it's unlimited. But the causal ocean is half the universe. And so they tried to carry that mountain, but it was so heavy it collapsed. They all collapsed under it and were smashed. Then Vishnu had to come and pick it up and bring them back to life. He came on Buddha, then he carried the mountain and put it into the ocean. And then they got Vasuki wrapped around it. But they couldn't churn because it was sinking in the water, and, you know, there was no resting place. so it could pivot. So he incarnated as this gigantic tortoise, which this is all described in the 8th canon. Huge, 800 yojanas or something. And they said that actually Krishna had an itch and he needed to scratch it back. So they put them out and then it could balance. And even then it was, he had to sit on top to keep it straight. So Krishna was there and Vishnu was there in so many ways. And he was leading the Vishnu that's with the demigods, he took the head of the snake. And the demigods took the head, and then the demons thought it must be better, the head, so we should have it. So they complained. So Vishnu agreed, okay. Of course, it turned out that holding the head was very troublesome because it's breathing smoke and fire. The tail was a better deal. But that was Vishnu's trick. The demons always think whatever someone else has better, and I should have what they have. So it's not fair. That's our mentality in the material world for most people. It's not fair. It's not fair. Why is this happening to me? I should get better. And then some people blame God. Some people just blame other people. Anyway, that's a demoniac mentality. In Kali Yuga, that's prominent. So they started churning, and lots of things were coming out. And Lakshmi came out, goddess of fortune. She was looking for a husband. She had the garland. She went around, she saw all the demigods, she didn't reject all of them. Finally, she accepted Vishnu. Finally, the nectar came out. That was Dandvantari came with the jug of nectar. So that's the Amrita, you know, the deathlessness, it's called it. Of course, not exactly deathless, but it gives such a long and healthy life that it's like. That's why the demigods are called Amara. We have the Amara Hotel here in Bangkok, in Thailand. So, you know, the idea is when you're there, it's so luxurious and nice that there's no such thing as birth, death, and old age and disease there, right? Only comforts. But it's just a hotel. Anyway, so the demons, immediately, the big demon grabbed the jug of nectar and ran away with it. And then the small demon said, wait, you know, we have to share it, we have to be fair. But the big demons were going to just take it for themselves, and they weren't even going to share it with the other demons. So that was, they were chasing after this demon with the jug of nectar. The demigods were also, you know, bewildered because they thought, you know, they were going to share it. They worked together to get it. So these things go on in the material world that, you know, people make alliances and friendships and whatever for some reason. And then they, one of them, the more powerful one, cheats the other one. This, you hear about it all the time, sometimes talking to life members and stuff. You know, my partner, I just found out he's been cheating me all along. And businessmen will tell you that I remember Japan, I met one man, and he had an insurance business. And then, you know, one salesman that he had trained up for years and given everything, you know, made his own company and took all the customers. They didn't know it was a new company. These things happen all the time. So this happened to the demigods. But because the demigods are devotees, and Krishna incarnated again, this is Mohini. Mohini was a woman form. And Prabhupada, when he told his story, he was saying, Krishna is the most beautiful already. But in the human form, the woman is more beautiful than the man. So when Krishna takes the form of a woman, then he's much more beautiful. So the demons immediately got completely bewildered by the beauty of this woman. They forgot everything. And they were just praising her and thinking, how can we please you? And she danced for them. And then she said, just give me that nectar and I'll, you know, distribute it fairly. So they just gave it to her. nature of the materialistic people, that they'll just do anything a woman tells them, right? So that's why they use the form of a woman in all the advertising, and everywhere you look, no matter what they're advertising, they show the beautiful woman. And all the movies and everything is just to exhibit the beautiful women and all the magazines. Because that's what bewilders the most. The sum total of all the Maya is there, all the beautiful and attractive things in the whole universe are all concentrated in the form of a woman. So it can bewilder anyone. So that's why we say it's Maya. It's not that the woman is Maya, but one has to be careful. And then a cultured woman will not want to show off her body and, you know, wear all the tight pants and all the things that they're doing nowadays, right? Because she knows it will disturb the minds of men. Then, so Mohini took the nectar, but then she gave it to the demigods. She didn't give it to the demons. And the demons were so enamored by her that they didn't know how to complain about it. But one demon, Rahu, he took the form of a demigod and sat down with the demigod. And he took the nectar and it just touched his mouth, and then she saw and she threw the chakra and cut off his head. But because his head had touched that nectar, didn't die. And Rahu is a planet, it's an inauspicious planet, generally inauspicious. Rahu planet, always harassing the sun and the moon, coming between and blocking, causing eclipses and all kinds of things. And one has to be astrologically careful, you know, the influence of the Rahu. So then Mohini, in this way, Krishna favored the demigods and saved them. This is an incarnation. This particular one mentions a tortoise, because the tortoise is one of the Das avatars, one of the main ones. And like I was saying yesterday, Krishna comes in all different species. And he told Arjuna, when you see a pig in the mud, which in India you'll see quite often pigs, many countries. In the villages of Thailand also. You find them in Fiji, the pigs are there, but of course the natives are chasing them to eat them. But you see the pigs all the time. And in India, in the street, you see the pigs digging in the garbage. They said you can, when you see the pig, you can remember the Braha incarnation. So when we see the tortoise also, we should remember the tortoise incarnation. Remember the fish. I have never seen so many turtles here, but fish you see a lot. Smell them. Right? So if we're fortunate, we can remember this fish incarnation instead of being disgusted by the smell of the fish and, you know, how they keep killing them. So that's Krishna's mercy, that he appears in so many different forms and species, and exhibits these leelas, so that, you know, in many ways we can be reminded of Krishna. When we see a beautiful woman, if we can remember the Mohini incarnation and how she bewildered all the demons, and then pray to Krishna not to get bewildered, that would be mercy. Because Lord Chaitanya said that even if he sees a wooden form of a woman, his mind will become disturbed. There's no power of that form. So nowadays in Kali Yuga, of course, everywhere, the women are walking down the street, fat and worse and naked, and with the dress and different things, and the pictures are everywhere. So we have to take shelter of the holy name. We have to understand what is really beautiful in this world, Krishna. Whatever there is that's beautiful and wonderful, people come to Thailand and they go on tours to see beautiful things. Besides just all the beautiful girls. But in the daytime, they go to the beautiful temples and the beautiful mountains and the beautiful waterfalls and the beautiful lagoons. Then at night, they go to the beautiful nightclubs, right? And see other beauty. So we want to see beautiful things, but Krishna is the most beautiful. And And whatever else is beautiful is just a little bit of Krishna's beauty. So if we relish the holy name, we chant, we keep worshiping the deity, then that beauty will become more and more manifest to us so that we can understand that the insignificance of all the other. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that whatever is beautiful in this world is just a spark of his splendor. That he's talking about the whole universe. But we have no idea what kind of beautiful scenery there is in the heavenly planet, right? What kind of... Prabhupada said if you saw the woman of the heavenly planet, the man would faint. And he said that the beautiful women here look like frogs compared to them. So we have no idea what to speak of the beautiful flowers. And the, like here we have a lot of beautiful flowers, and every once in a while one has a nice smell. But in the heavenly planets, even the bodies of the women smell good. They don't need perfume. The perfume was, which is such a big business now, right? The duty-free, so-called duty-free shop. It's your duty to go shopping, it really is. You must go shopping. They advertise all this perfume, how it will drive the man mad, it will drive the woman mad, it will make everybody love you, right? But originally it was built, the French didn't take bath very much, and they made perfume to cover the bad smell of their body. Because naturally, the human body doesn't smell good. It smells bad. So they had to have all this perfume and breath fresheners and, you know, so many things to cover that up. But in the heavenly planets, even the bodies smell good. All the flowers smell good. And not, they smell really good. We find sometimes here, it was amazing in the Ujjain, the temple, all the flowers that smell like I never seen. The roses from, you know, 3 or 4 meters away, you can smell the roses. And all the flowers that go there, they smell like anything, at least in the temple complex. Those are real flowers. Most Kali Yuga flowers, they don't have the smell. Even the scientists, they took out the smell just to make it more strong and look better. In Kali Yuga, people go more by how something looks and what's really there. So if you dress up very nicely, people think you must be a good person. It doesn't matter how you behave. They don't look at that. They don't look at the essence or the substance. They just look at the external. I remember in Germany, that one cigarette came out. And everywhere was a big signboard for this cigarette. And, you know, driving by, I couldn't really see it. And one day I was walking and I saw it up close. So the whole advertisement was for the box. They had a new box. And the box on the edge was like this, not square, a little bit. So it's supposed to be such a nice box that you can hold that box more comfortably. And not even care what's inside. And that's the same way, people. They don't care about their body even. They just dress it up nice and eat anything, take any kind of poison intoxication. But they dress it up very nicely. Fix their hair very nicely, they get their teeth fixed very nicely. But they don't care about their body mostly. And they want to speak of the soul, they don't even know there's a soul. Right? But a devotee, we know there's a soul, and when we look at people, we're looking, trying to see the real person. And we judge people by their activities. Kali Yuga man will be judged, you know, if he has a lot of money, they'll think he's a great man. Right? And if you don't have money, they think you must be really bad. Even amongst religious people. Think if this church has a lot of money, this must be a really good one. If the sadhu is really poor, you know, most people won't respect. They just give some, you know, they give some free food or something, but they come to listen to the one that's very rich. It has huge followers, television shows. In America, some many of these big preachers, they had their own television satellite. They broadcast 24 hours. Give money, give money, give money. We need money for the mission. Give your money, give your money. And somehow people just keep sending him money. Oh, he's got so much money, he must be great. But Prabhupada came with nothing to America and somehow attracted many people that came from wealthy families that had rejected that type of society. Prabhupada said, what have I got? You know, Giriraj Swami, his father is a multimillionaire. And he came to Bombay and was asking Giriraj, please come and take over the business. You know, I need you. It's your only son. And he said, no, I have, you know, work to do here. And his father was intelligent. And he actually asked Prabhupada, what are you giving him? You know, how can this be? That he doesn't care about millions of dollars and running a big business. And Prabhupada said, I'm only giving him Krishna. I have nothing. Not paying anybody. Actually, there were, at that time, especially in Bombay, very austere. You know, there was no proper buildings, there was no proper water, or food. You know, there was mosquitoes everywhere and rats. But the devotees were so enlivened by, you know, the kirtan and by Prabhupada's association and by somehow or other that they, even though they left, you know, opulent homes in America, they were happy to. And now, of course, Bombay is opulent. But devotees are still traveling on buses and distributing books. They're not trying to enjoy the opulent guest house. So, Krishna is the source of everything. So if we get Krishna, then you get everything. Sometimes, you know, we hear that Krishna will satisfy all desires, and people join, and then they're thinking, well, I'm going to get rich, I'm going to get the beautiful wife, I'm going to get all these things. And then after a while, they don't get those things, and they're thinking, well, what's the use of chanting? It was a trick. But the real thing is that, just like Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted so much, but when he saw Krishna, then he thought, I don't, you know, what? Nothing is valuable, now I've got the most valuable thing. And Krishna gave him everything anyway. He didn't care for it. When a devotee is completely renounced and doesn't want anything material, Krishna then can give him a lot because he can use it all in Krishna's service. So we see sometimes someone comes and they become a devotee and their business increases like anything. And some come and they lose everything. It just depends on what's going to be good for them to make spiritual advance. Krishna took everything away from Prabhupada. And then he gave it all back, much more. In the preaching society. Yudhisthira was exiled and lost his whole kingdom for so many years. But then he got back and got everything. But he just took it all. He never complained. He never asked Krishna, give me this, give me that. He just worshipped Krishna. He did his tapasya. He carried on with his, you know, his life. So we can try to remember incarnations of Krishna. In Bali, we see a lot of turtles. They eat them. But then we should try to remember these incarnations. The turtle, the fish, the boar, the lion. And it says Krishna is incarnated in all species. But they're not all like famous, but somehow or other he enters in all the different species, so that Benedict those species. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Any question? Time to get moving. Right?
Everybody are going to open the shop.